A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I was sitting there recording a prompt for the My Weird Prompts podcast and stood up and then realized I did not have my phone. Fortunately, I found my phone on the bench, but I thought, wait, I must send in a prompt about phone loss, phone recovery, and a few things I've always wondered. Does anyone make these? Because it would be really useful to have. So as a man with ADHD, I have to say, my phone goes missing around the house probably on average 5 if not 10 times a day. I'd say we're down to actually once every few days in reality, but, and I haven't lost my phone. Like, I actually had a real, I lost my phone somewhere, no idea where it is, have to buy a new one incident in, I'd say 10 years, but it's deterred me from buying decent Androids because I just don't trust myself to lose them. Part of it is that, part of it is I've no idea if I lose it. It really takes a long time, the last time it happened, to get back. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to hedge my investment here and keep my Androids fairly expendable in the grand scheme of things. But here's where I guess I'd love to have clarity. Number one is backups. So I'm using Android, and there's a concept in backups and recovery about, you know, the maximum time you're offline and the maximum amount of data you lose. So if you talk about the maximum amount that you lose, if you take a backup once a week, assuming that you can recover it, your maximum data loss is about 1 week of changes. So for me on Android personally, I don't change or install or remove or tinker with apps so frequently. It's more like if I do lose it, I find it's, you can get the apps back, but frequently the kind of settings and changes, the app data, I guess, is what gets lost, and that's always the painful bit. I'm thinking I'll give you an example. There's a program called Folder Sync. It's a great utility. It allows you to set up sync jobs between your phone and the cloud. Now, you can back up well-made Android apps, especially those who are popular with the power user set like me, usually contain a backup feature. The problem is, if you have 20 or 30 apps, no one is realistically going to manually back up every single app data configuration even once a year, to be honest. So I think the only, there's backups are only useful, in my experience, if it's something that is pretty easy and you can, to use a well-worn phrase, set it and forget it. You know that, okay, once a month I've got some really good backup going on my phone, and therefore worst case scenario I lose my phone, it's not the end of the world. The second concern is, to state the obvious, data loss, right? If you lose your phone on a bar and you don't have it locked or whatever, maybe, or you do but you figure it's fallen into the clutches of some shady cyber criminal whose name might be Daniel, they're gonna get rained at somehow, right? So data protection, these apps for I lost my phone tend to ring and support remote wiping. Now there's one called Cerebius that I think is supposed to be really good. That's the one I'm using, and it does allow me to do that. But here's the truth. If I were to, you know, we've talked about in all our prepping podcasts, I feel like everyone, myself included, tends to focus on the threats that are less likely to materialize. Because here's one failure mode, as you call it, in that particular device loss model that I would point to, which is if you have a great I lost my phone thingy majiggy, that's going to enable you to effortlessly and very quickly factory reset your device, and it's locked anyway. You're giving no chance, or very limited chance really, for a good Samaritan to actually get you your phone back. And maybe I'm naive, but I feel like living in Jerusalem, I've seen a decent amount of this. Now, here's my questions. There's a few ways I thought about you could do this. One of them would be to stick, you know, just put a sticker or maybe even a QR code on the back of your phone My phone is always in a case, and I actually feel like that would make a lot of sense. If you're really determined to return someone's phone, you'd probably do that. But then again, you might not think, wait, maybe the guy put a sticker on the inside of his phone, and if I scan that, I'll get it back to him. So probably, here's what I would regard as an ideal recovery solution, and I'm sure some app, or I hope some app has thought of this. If so, I'd love to know which one. You've lost, let's say you lose your phone at a bar, and you could remotely trigger phone loss mode or something like that, and it would display the device would be in kind of a locked state or on guard. The lock is persistent, but there is a QR code on that displays on the phone saying, this phone is lost, scan this to notify the owner. And that way, you've kind of hedged your bets. If you've got the Good Samaritan, it's going to scan your phone. If they don't, maybe after 3 days, you remotely nuke the thing. Now, anything like that, and what do you say about the safety profile there? That is it, actually, Herman and Corin. Those are my questions about Android phone loss and prevention, if any of those technologies do exist. I've used my phone tracker thingy once, actually, now that I think about it. I left it at a restaurant, you know, as one tends to do after drinking a few too many beers, and I was able to use GPS. And here's one story I'll end the prompt with. So I call up the restaurant. I'm like, it has to be there. I'm like, please check. They say, nobody, there's no phone here, sorry. I think, oh no, this is the one phone I've actually liked in ages. I have to get a new one. But then I think, wait, I installed that phone finding thing, and I'm not expecting much. I go onto it and I see, wait, the GPS is active. It's at the restaurant. So they just totally missed it. I ran back there, and there it was under my seat. So tech saved the day. And therefore, I think these things are actually really valuable. If they save your butt once or your phone once, the yearly subscriptions are more than worth it. And I like Cerebius, but I'd love to know if there's what can actually handle all the pain points. Maybe Cerebius itself, and I just haven't set it up properly. Over to you two.
Daniel sent us this one after losing his phone on a bench, which feels like the most Daniel way to kick off a question. He's an Android user, and he's asking about the whole phone loss pipeline. Backups that actually work for power users, data protection if the phone falls into the wrong hands, and whether there's an app that balances security with giving a Good Samaritan a way to return it. Specifically, he wants a lost phone mode that shows a QR code on the lock screen so someone can scan it and notify him, but still lets him remotely nuke the thing after a few days if nobody bites.
This is such a good prompt because it cuts right through the fantasy of how phone recovery is supposed to work versus what actually happens. And Daniel's instinct about the tension between security and returnability. That's the thing nobody talks about.
Before we dive in, quick note, today's script is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, which I only mentioned because it handled Daniel's multi-part question surprisingly cleanly.
Let's start with backups, because Daniel framed this really precisely. He's talking about recovery point objective and recovery time objective, RPO and RTO, which is the language backup engineers use. RPO is how much data you lose measured in time since your last backup. RTO is how long it takes to be operational again. He's right that on Android, the app data is the painful bit. Google's built-in backup system has been around since Android 6, and it covers app data, call history, contacts, settings, SMS edges, but here's the catch. It only backs up app data for apps that opt into it, and the developer has to explicitly enable it. If the developer doesn't flip that switch in their manifest, Google Backup just skips their data entirely.
If you've got 30 apps and only 12 of them bothered to enable backup, you're losing the other 18.
And that's the default experience. Google gives each app 25 megabytes of backup storage on Google Drive, which is per app, and it doesn't count against your drive quota. But the developer has to do the work. A lot of indie app developers don't bother. Some explicitly avoid it because they don't want to deal with the complexity of restoring data across different OS versions. So Daniel's instinct that you need something beyond the built-in backup is completely correct.
He mentioned Folder Sync. What's the actual capability there?
Folder Sync is essentially an rsync-like tool for Android. It can sync local folders to cloud storage. Google Drive, Dropbox, OneDrive, SMB Shares, even SFTP. The power move with Folder Sync is that you can point it at an app's data directory if you have root access. Without root, you're limited to what Android exposes through the storage access framework, which is mostly your shared storage, documents, photos, downloads. The app private data directories and data are sandboxed. So Folder Sync is great for keeping your photos and documents synced continuously, but for app settings and databases, it hits the same wall unless you're rooted.
Rooting an Android in 2026 is not the casual affair it was in 2015.
It's actively hostile now. Google's safety net, well, now it's Play Integrity, will break Google Pay, banking apps, some streaming apps, even some games, if it detects an unlocked bootloader or root. There's a whole cat-and-mouse game with Magisk and Zygisk and Hiding Root, but for someone like Daniel who just wants his phone to work reliably, rooting is not a practical answer. So the backup problem for unrooted power users is genuinely unsolved at the OS level.
What do power users actually do? He said nobody's manually backing up 30 apps even once a year, and he's right.
There are a few approaches. One is Swift Backup, which is an app that can back up APKs and app data without root in some cases, by using Android's accessibility service to automate the process. It's clever but fragile. It breaks when apps update their UII. Another approach is Neo Backup, which used to be called OAN Backup X. It requires root, but it's the gold standard for full app data backup. Then there's the Helium approach. Helium was an app by the Clockwork Mod developer that used ADB backup over USB to a desktop. That still technically works. You can run ADB backup from a computer and it'll pull app data for many apps, but Google has been deprecating it. In Android 12, they marked it as deprecated, and in newer versions, some apps block it entirely by setting allow backup to false in their manifest.
The state of Android backup for power users is basically a patchwork of partial solutions, none of which are truly set and forget.
That's the honest answer. And it's been this way for years. Apple's iCloud backup is better here. It backs up everything, app data included, because Apple mandates it and controls the whole stack. On iOS, when you restore from an iCloud backup, your apps come back with their data intact. No developer opt-in required. Android's approach gives developers more flexibility, but the user experience suffers. Daniel's strategy of keeping his Androids expendable is a rational response to this reality.
You also raised the data protection angle. Someone gets your phone. What's at risk? He mentioned Cerberus, which he's using. What's the actual security profile there?
Cerberus is one of the oldest and most respected anti-theft apps for Android. It's been around since 2011. The core feature set is remote tracking via GPS, remote locking, remote wiping, taking photos with the front or rear camera, recording audio, and displaying messages on the screen. It also has SIM card change detection if someone swaps the SIM. Cerberus sends the new number to your email and can keep tracking. It can hide itself from the app drawer, which is useful if a thief doesn't know it's installed. The app has a web dashboard and SMS commands you can send from any phone.
Daniel's question about the QR code on the lock screen, does Cerberus do that?
Not natively in the form Daniel described. Cerberus can display a custom message on the lock screen, which is part of its lost phone mode. You can write something like, "This phone is lost. Call this number." But it doesn't generate a QR code that a finder can scan to notify you. That said, the message display feature is flexible enough that you could include a phone number or email address right on the lock screen. The QR code idea is clever because it reduces friction. A finder doesn't have to type anything, just point their camera. But the question is whether the finder would even think to scan a QR code on a lost phone. Most people's instinct when they find a phone is to either turn it in somewhere or try to unlock it.
That's the behavioral economics of it. A QR code is only useful if the finder recognizes what it's for and bothers to scan it. And Daniel's concerned about remote wipe closing the door on recovery, he's not wrong.
He's absolutely right, and this is the tension that every anti-theft solution has to navigate. If you remotely wipe the phone, you've protected your data, but you've also erased any way for a good Samaritan to contact you. The phone becomes a blank slate, so the question is, what's your actual threat model? Daniel mentioned living in Jerusalem and feeling like there are decent odds a lost phone gets returned. If you believe that, you might want to delay the wipe and give a finder time to do the right thing. Cerberus lets you do this. You can lock the device, display a message, track it, and only wipe as a last resort. The lock screen message is your bridge to the finder.
There's also Android's built-in Find My Device, which got a major overhaul recently. What does that do compared to Cerberus?
Google's Find My Device network launched its expanded version in 2024, and by now in 2026 it's mature. It works similarly to Apple's Find My Network. It uses a crowdsourced Bluetooth mesh. Even if your phone is offline, nearby Android devices can detect its Bluetooth beacon and report its location back to you, encrypted and anonymized. That's a big deal because previously, Find My Device only worked if the phone had an internet connection. Now it works offline, which covers the scenario where a thief turns off mobile data or removes the SIMF. You can also ring the phone, lock it with a message, or wipe it remotely. And if you have a Pixel, the phone remains findable for several hours even after it's powered off, because the Bluetooth chip stays active on a reserve power trickle.
That offline finding is the feature that would have helped Daniel at the restaurant. He wouldn't have needed the restaurant staff to check. He could have just seen the phone was still there.
And it's free, built in, no subscription required. Cerberus costs, I believe, about 5 euros per year per device for the full license. The free version is limited. The paid version gives you unlimited devices, no ads, and the full feature set. For what it offers, 5 euros a year is extremely reasonable. But Google's built-in tools have closed the gap considerably. The main thing Cerberus still does better is the stealth features, taking photos of the thief, recording audio, hiding itself. Google's Find My Device is more about recovery than catching a thief.
Let's talk about Daniel's ideal scenario. He loses his phone at a bar. He remotely triggers a lost mode. The phone locks, displays a QR code that says, "This phone is lost. Scan to notify owner." If a good Samaritan scans it, they get a way to contact him. Maybe it opens a web form, or an email, or a phone call. If nobody scans it after 3 days, he remotely wipes it. Does anything on the market do all of that?
Not in a single polished package that I'm aware of. But you can approximate it. With Cerberus, you'd lock the phone and display a message with your contact info. You could include a link. Cerberus supports displaying a custom message, and if you include a URL, it's technically clickable if the phone is unlocked, but on the lock screen it's just text. The finder would have to manually type it. With Google's Find My Device, you can lock the phone and display a message and a phone number right on the lock screen. That's actually the simplest path. It's built in, it's free, and the message is prominently displayed. But neither generates a QR code.
The QR code lock screen is a genuine gap in the market. Someone should build that. It seems doable. You'd need an app with device administrator permissions that can overlay a custom lock screen with a dynamically generated QR code when it receives a remote trigger. The QR code encodes a URL. That goes to a service where the finder can submit a message or see contact info.
The technical challenge is that Android's lock screen overlay permissions are tightly restricted for security reasons. You can't just draw over the lock screen the way you can over apps. Device administrator and device owner APIs give you some control. You can set a lock screen message, but you can't render arbitrary UI elements like a QR code. To do what Daniel wants, the app would need to be set as the device owner, which usually requires it to be installed during initial setup or via NFC provisioning. That's a lot of friction for a consumer app. Alternatively, the app could use the notification system to display a persistent notification with a QR code, but that only works if the phone is unlocked. On the lock screen, notifications are limited to what the system allows.
It's not impossible, but it's not something a casual app developer can ship on the Play Store without jumping through hoops. That explains why it doesn't exist as a polished product.
There's another approach that some custom ROMs have experimented with. Embedding contact info into the lock screen itself as part of the system UI. iLineage OS had a feature where you could set an owner info message that displayed persistently. But again, that's not something you can just install as an app. The closest thing I've seen in the commercial space is an app called Prey, which is more enterprise focused. Prey has a lost mode that can display a message, and it supports multiple platforms: Android, iOS, Windows, Mac. But it also doesn't do the QR code.
Daniel's other question was about the safety profile of delaying a wipe. If you leave the phone locked but not wiped for 3 days, what's the actual risk?
It depends on the phone's encryption state and lock screen security. Modern Android phones, since Android 7 or so, are encrypted by default with file-based encryption. The encryption key is derived from the user's lock screen PIN or password. If you have a strong PIN, 6 digits or more, and the phone is locked, the data is effectively inaccessible without that PIN. The attacker can't pull the storage chip and read it because it's encrypted. They can't brute force the PIN because Android has rate limiting and escalating lockout timers. After too many failed attempts, the phone can be configured to wipe itself, though that's usually optional.
A locked, encrypted Android phone with a strong PIN is a brick to an attacker, even if they have physical possession for days.
For most attackers, yes. A sophisticated adversary, a state actor, a forensics lab, might have tools to exploit vulnerabilities or do chip-off attacks with specialized equipment. But Daniel's threat model is a phone left at a bar, not a targeted attack by a nation-state. For the bar scenario, a locked phone with a 6-digit PIN is essentially secure. The bigger risk is if the phone was unlocked when lost, or if the lock screen is something trivial like a swipe pattern that's easy to guess. Daniel said his phone is locked, so the data is protected even if he delays the wipe.
That's worth emphasizing because a lot of people don't realize how good modern phone encryption is. It's not like a laptop from 2012 where pulling the hard drive gave you everything.
File-based encryption on Android means each file is encrypted with a unique key, and those keys are wrapped by the user's credential. Even the system can't read user data until the user unlocks the device after boot. That's why, after a reboot, your phone asks for your PIN before it'll even show notifications. It literally cannot decrypt them yet.
Daniel can afford to wait a few days before nuking the phone. The data is safe. The real risk is that someone finds the phone, it's locked. They can't do anything with it, and they just toss it or sell it for parts. The QR code or lock screen message is about preventing that outcome, giving the finder a path to return it.
There's one more feature worth mentioning that Daniel might not be aware of. Google's Find My Device now supports marking a device as lost, which does several things at once. It locks the device, signs out of your Google account on the device, displays your contact message, enables location tracking, and activates the offline Find-in network. It also suspends Google Pay cards on the device. That's a one-tap solution from the Find My Device web dashboard. It doesn't wipe, so it preserves the return path. You can wipe later if you need to.
That's probably the closest thing to Daniel's ideal workflow right now. One tap, the phone is secured but still returnable, and you can escalate to wipe if recovery fails.
It's free. Cerberus is great for the power user features like stealth photos and SIM change alerts, but for the core use case. I lost my phone, I want it back, I want my data protected. Google's built-in tools have gotten good.
Let's talk about the pre-loss preparation, because Daniel mentioned the sticker or QR code on the back of the phone. That's a low-tech solution that actually makes a lot of sense.
It does, and there are companies that sell these. You can get engraved metal stickers with a QR code that links to a profile where someone can report your phone found. The service sends you an alert. It's basically a physical version of what Daniel wants on the lock screen. The limitation is that the sticker is on the outside of the phone, so if the phone is in a case, it might not be visible. Daniel mentioned he keeps his phone in a case, so he'd need the sticker on the outside of the case or a case with the QR code printed on it. That exists. There are custom case makers who'll print a QR code and a message like, "If found, scan to return," right on the back.
That's actually clever because it works even if the phone is dead. A lock screen QR code only helps if the phone has power. A physical sticker works indefinitely.
The battery is the single point of failure for any software-based recovery solution. If the phone dies, no lock screen message, no GPS tracking, no remote wipe. A sticker is permanent. It's also immediately visible to anyone who picks up the phone. They don't have to wake the screen or interact with the device at all.
The belt and suspenders approach would be a physical QR sticker on the case plus Find My Device or Cerberus for the software side. The sticker handles the Good Samaritan case. The software handles tracking and remote wipe.
Daniel could set the lock screen message to reference the same contact method. So the finder sees it on the case, sees it on the lock screen, and has multiple paths to reach him.
There's also a privacy consideration with the physical sticker. If the QR code links to a profile with your contact information, anyone who sees your phone in public can scan it and get your name and phone number or email. That might be fine. It's not that different from a luggage tag, but it's worth thinking about.
Some of these services let you control what's visible. The QR code resolves to a page that lets the finder send you a message without revealing your contact info. The service relays the message to you, so you're not putting your phone number on the back of your phone for anyone to scan.
That's a better design. It's basically an anonymous relay. The finder scans, types a message, hits send, and you get an email or push notification. Then you can choose to respond and coordinate the return.
There are a few companies doing this. ReturnMe and Tile both have QR code sticker products. Tile's version integrates with their Finding network, so the sticker itself has a Tile tracker embedded, but you're paying for the hardware and the service. A simple static QR code sticker from a company like Sticker Mule costs a few cents and lasts years.
Let's circle back to backups, because Daniel's point about set and forget is the crux of the whole thing. If the backup process requires ongoing attention, it's not going to happen. What's the closest thing to a set and forgetful backup on Android right now?
Honestly, the closest thing is not on Android at all. It's switching to a phone that takes backup seriously. But since Daniel is committed to Android, the best practical approach I've seen is a combination of three things. 1. Google One Backup for the basics. It covers app data for apps that support it, SMS, call history, device settings, photos, and videos. 2. A separate cloud sync for files, folder sync, or even just Google Drive's auto sync for documents and downloads. 3. A periodic manual backup using ADB for the apps that don't support cloud backup. You'd run a script on your computer once a month that pulls the data directories for your critical apps via ADB backup. It's not set and forget, but once a month is manageable.
What about apps that store their data in the cloud natively? A lot of the apps Daniel probably uses, note-taking apps, password managers, to-do lists, already sync their data to their own servers.
That's a really important point. If an app has its own cloud sync, you don't need to back it up at all. The data lives on the company's servers. Your password manager syncs to its cloud. Your notes app syncs. Your email is on the server. The apps that need backup are the ones that store data only locally, and those are increasingly rare. Most well-designed apps have moved to cloud-synced models because users expect their data to survive a phone switch. So the backup problem is actually smaller than it seems. Daniel might only have a handful of apps that are truly local, only, and need special attention.
That's a good reframe. The apps that don't sync are the exception, not the rule. Identify those 5 or 6 apps, make sure you have a plan for them, and the rest takes care of itself.
Some of those local-only apps have their own export feature. Like Daniel mentioned, well-made power user apps often include a backup or export option. The problem is remembering to use it. But if you only have to remember for 5 apps instead of 30, that's a lot more realistic.
Daniel also mentioned that he's been deterred from buying decent Androids because he doesn't trust himself not to lose them. The backup and recovery picture we've painted suggests that losing a phone isn't catastrophic if you've got the right prep in place. You lose the hardware, but your data survives, and you can be back up and running on a new device fairly quickly.
The RTO, recovery time objective, on Android has gotten much better. Google Setup Wizard now offers to restore from a previous device, and it can pull apps, settings, and data from your Google One backup. It's not as seamless as Apple's iCloud Restore, but it's close. The main friction is that some apps will require you to sign in again, and some won't restore their data. But the core experience, contacts, photos, messages, call history, Wi-Fi passwords, app list, comes back automatically. You can go from unboxing a new phone to being operational in under an hour.
The advice to Daniel is basically, 1. Enable Google One Backup and make sure it's running. 2. For apps that don't sync to the cloud, identify them and set a calendar reminder once a month to do a manual export or ADB backup. 3. Use Find My Device or Cerberus for tracking and remote lock, and configure the lock screen message with contact info. 4. Consider a physical QR code sticker on the case as a low-tech backup for the Good Samaritan scenario. 5. Use a strong lock screen PIN, so you can afford to delay a remote wipe.
6. If Cerberus is working for him, keep using it. The SIM change alert and stealth photo features are useful in a theft scenario, which is different from a loss scenario. In a theft, you want to catch the thief. In a loss, you want to help the finder return it. Cerberus handles both.
There's one more thing I want to touch on. Daniel mentioned that the last time he lost a phone for real was about 10 years ago, but he misplaces it around the house constantly. That's not a backup problem, it's a finding problem. And there are solutions for that too.
The in-house finding problem is actually solved better than the lost in the wild problem. If you have a smart speaker or a smart display, you can just say, "Hey Google, find my phone," and it'll ring it at full volume even if it's on silent. That's been a feature for years and it works flawlessly. You can also go to the Find My Device website and ring it from there. If you have a Wear OS smartwatch, there's usually a Find My Phone button right on the watch. So, the 5 times a day around the house thing is a solved problem.
unless the phone is face down and the ringer is muffled. Then you're still crawling around listening for the vibration.
That's when you make someone else call it. Or you get a smartwatch and use the Find My Phone feature that plays a loud tone regardless of silent mode. The watch vibrates when the phone disconnects via Bluetooth, so you even get an alert if you walk away from it.
Daniel's story about the restaurant is a good case study in why these tools matter. He called the restaurant, they said no phone here, he checked the tracking app, saw the GPS was still at the restaurant, went back, found it under his seat. Without the tracking app, he would have assumed it was gone and bought a new phone. The app paid for itself in that one incident.
That's the thing about these services. They feel like an unnecessary subscription until the day you need them, and then they're the best 5 euros you ever spent. The math is straightforward. If a tracking app costs 5 euros a year and it saves you from buying a new phone once every 10 years, you're paying 50 euros to avoid an 800 euro purchase. That's a 16-to-1 return on investment.
When you put it that way, not having a tracking app is the irrational choice.
It's an insurance policy where the premium is 5 euros a year and the payout is a phone. The expected value is massively positive.
To answer Daniel's core question directly, does an app exist that does the full QR code lock screen plus delayed wipe workflow? The QR code on the lock screen is a gap, but you can get very close with a combination of Google's Find My Device for the lock screen message, and remote management, Cerberus for the advanced anti-theft features, and a physical QR sticker for the Good Samaritan path. The security profile of delaying a wipe is fine as long as you have a strong PIN and modern encryption.
On the backup side, the honest answer is that Android's backup story is still incomplete for power users who care about app data. But the practical impact is smaller than it seems because most important data lives in the cloud already. For the apps that don't, a monthly manual backup routine is the best we've got.
It's not the seamless set and forget experience Daniel wants, but it's workable. And the fact that he's asking these questions means he's already ahead of most people.
Most people don't think about phone loss until they're standing in a bar parking lot at 1 in the morning patting their pockets. Daniel's thinking about it on a Wednesday afternoon with his phone safely on his desk. That's the right time to think about it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1910s, a Russian expedition to the Yamal Peninsula reported that the indigenous Nenets people measured distance not in miles or kilometers, but in reindeer rests. The distance a reindeer can travel before needing to lie down, roughly 6 kilometers. Converting modern GPS coordinates into reindeer rests would require dividing by 6 and hoping the reindeer wasn't feeling lazy.
I have so many questions about reindeer motivation.
That's going to stick with me in a way I'm not entirely comfortable with.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got a question like Daniel's, something that's been rattling around in your head about how technology actually works in the real world, send it over. We're at My Weird Prompts.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop, and we'll catch you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.